everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this Friday, June 12th. Hope everybody's had a great week. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy, Brendan Kraft, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, one of the fine young people coming into our business, and we need a lot more of people like Brendan. He does a great job for us. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's part of the Bustos Media Center, our radio station. We've got, what, six?
We got about five stations.
Oh, five.
Here.
Did I add another? I added one. Just
you're getting too excited.
I know. We've got five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. We do a weekly edition of the Buckmaster Show, and we're here each Friday, noon to one, continuing with the Buckmaster Show tradition that began 15 and a half years ago. Have our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts at our newly redesigned website. I encourage everybody, take a look. I've got all of our shows over 15 and a half years. They're all there, along with my new travel blog. We've got some really great pictures and stories of my recent travels. There'll be some more this summer. But we're having fun with that. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And we thank Sean and his team over at Rincon Ventures for continuing their support of what we do here. Our media partners include TucsonSentinel.com and the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. We're going to do Joe Ferguson will be walking in the door very shortly. He'll be my media co-host. Joe, the former Arizona Daily Star reporter, now editor of the online news service Tucson Agenda. Joe just sent me a text. He's caught in traffic, just like you predicted, Leah. There's so much construction everywhere, every street. And Grant Road continues slowly.
Right outside the station, we have some
construction. Right outside, yes. So, Leah Marquez Peterson, our friend, is with us. She's one of the five members of the Arizona Corporation Commission. And Leah, by the time Joe walks in the door, he's about a mile away. Why don't you tell our listeners about the Arizona Corporation Commissioner? Give us the 30-second elevator pitch when people, and they do it all the time, they say to you, what's the Arizona Corporation
they
Commission?
They do. They do. Thank you, Bill, for having me. I really appreciate it. So the Arizona Corporation Commission is a five-member board, and we're elected. So we're on your ballot each time you receive one at the state level. We regulate private investor-owned utilities. So for that's electricity, like TEP or TRICO, if you're in this area. That's wastewater and water and gas. We actually manage railroad and pipeline safety also. We incorporate every business in the state. So most business owners listening to this are familiar with us for going through the website. Mm-hmm. And we also tackle securities fraud, which people are often surprised about. But we see a lot of scams and things that, folks try to implement, and we go after them, civil prosecution. So it's very busy at the commission.
Leah Marquez Peterson is a past chair of the commission. Leah was appointed by the governor in 2019. That was Governor Ducey, and later won election to a four-year term, not only in 2020, but again in 2024. So she didn't have to stand for re-election
right.
for another 2 years. Leah is the first Hispanic woman to serve in a statewide seat in Arizona history, and the only commissioner on the board based outside of the Phoenix area, which is really important, I think. You mentioned pipeline safety. Folks may have heard about Kinder Morgan, which brings gasoline into the Tucson right. area, into Arizona from either Texas or from California, correct?
Correct.
Ben, you know a little bit about this because you owned six service stations here in Tucson. What are they proposing to do, and is there a ACC component to this?
So there's not likely an ACC connection, but as a former gas station owner, I'm a little bit familiar, though it's been years since I've been in the industry. California is in crisis related to gasoline affordability. I was just there. We were talking about that before your show, paid $7 a gallon for 87 octane in San Diego to fill my vehicle. And they're just really feeling it. I know their energy commission is tackling it, trying to come up with solutions. So Kinder Morgan and some of the pipeline companies are partnering to bring in additional capacity for gasoline from Texas to California and coming by way of New Mexico and Arizona. So it'll be controversial, any kind of large development like this. And there's also the concern with speed. How quickly can it be built? Because obviously people want to relieve that pressure related to pricing. But it's got to go through communities. So they're going to be working closely with the communities in southern Arizona that'll be impacted by such a pipeline. And I did see the write-up in the Tucson Agenda also and zoomed in on the map, probably like most people did.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any specifics yet, but certainly southern Arizona, I think, will be impacted.
So why is gasoline so expensive in California? Don't they have refineries over there?
They used to have a lot more refineries. they put such like clean air standards in place that and made it so expensive and pricey for the refineries to participate that a lot of them have pulled out. I think, off the top of my head, there's only one refinery remaining in California. So obviously supply and demand. California also thought, I think, they'd have a big lift in electric vehicles, and they haven't seen that impact as much as they thought. So it's just lessening supply, and their prices have gone up dramatically.
That's a $5 billion project, and Lord knows how long it will take. By the time
it finally gets
to the off the drawing board, it could be a lot more than $5 billion. Closer to home, and something that we're really watching, is the grid, the electric grid for us, as everybody's powering up the AC right now as we start to get warmer weather. Hopefully the rains will be coming soon. Are we okay so far?
Yes. I mean, we have been laser focused on grid reliability. I know it doesn't sound very exciting, but what we're doing, you know, years in advance, as well as even just months ago, had summer preparedness meetings where we talked to our largest electric utilities and asked about either the energy they're generating from their own plants or the procurement plans they have to purchase energy. And what are the projections? I mean, the amount of energy we use daily is dependent on the weather, dependent on, you know, large users, dependent on seasonality going on and so on throughout the state. So they're very focused on that. And we're in good shape. All of our utilities have told us so. Of course, we're always double checking and making sure and verifying that we're prepared for these very hot summers.
Last Friday, we had Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. He's a water expert from the U of A. We're talking about the continuing issues on the Colorado River. And this is something you follow very closely because there's a utility component to all of this, that if this water level in the dams were to go too low, it could impact generating capacity.
Right. So we're watching the negotiations that are occurring very closely. It's the upper basin states and the lower basin states negotiating what that allocation will look like. We're actually planning a workshop. My office is putting it together a few months from now in late August, because we think things hopefully will be settled by then, where we can hear directly from the director of Water Resources for Arizona and EPCOR and Arizona Water, which are two of our regulated water utilities. It'll give us an update in terms of their engagement or how what kind of impact they might have.
With that sustainability piece, if things got so bad and so low with the dams, and we had to what they call kind of a dead pool, where would we get our electricity?
So at this point, we've had the federal government
act. What's the backup plan?
It's the federal government releasing additional water, leaving water into Lake Powell and Lake Mead so that we don't have that dead pool. So they're watching that very closely. That's part of the negotiations, and certainly very concerning. And it seems like those negotiations change weekly, so we're watching it.
You've been looking at nuclear as a power, and we do have a huge facility, the Palo Verde facility. I think we have the capacity for three generating, and only two are online, correct?
No, I believe we have the three operating.
All three
are four gigs, which is a lot of energy.
Okay.
A lot of folks, when I travel around the state and speak, don't realize we have one of the largest generating capacity nuclear power plants in the country, in the West Valley of Phoenix. It operates on reclaimed water coming from the city of Phoenix, which is incredible. That was built in the 80s. And so you've seen our three largest utilities, APS and SRP, which are in Phoenix, and Tucson Electric Power, all put out a press release saying they're exploring options. Of course, the challenge is who will pay for this? Where will it be? We don't know. This is all exploration and research. Right now, as you are aware, There's so much activity related to data centers and semiconductor industry and large load. I'm assuming they will likely be partners in anything that happens because we need them to pay the chunk of this so it doesn't land on residential customers from my perspective as one commissioner. But we're very pro-nuclear and think it's a great option because it's a source of clean energy.
Yeah, it's interesting. This budget that has been tentatively approved in Phoenix puts a three-year moratorium, Leah, on data centers for tax relief for those that want to do that. And I don't know if that will slow the interest in Arizona, but we do need to point out, we did last week with Dr. Silvertooth, about how much these data centers use not only water, but electricity. They're power hungry.
Yeah, I don't think the loss of a tax incentive will be a big impact.
Right.
We are like, I think, third in the country for data center development. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that'll slow them down. However, we've seen how public affairs were impacted or the development of Project Blue here and how that kind of imploded on the community. I think the data center industry has become aware that you can't hide behind NDAs. You need to be very transparent. You need to not use water, period. Use reclaim water. I think they can air cool it, so they'll use more energy. So it depends on what utility territory they're going to land within and if there's capacity. So there are a lot of moving parts on this, and I expect to see data center development in Arizona probably handled a little differently than we've seen here in the Tucson area.
After the break, we'll talk about TEP and rates. And generally, though, and I'm kind of waiting for my co-anchor here who's caught in traffic, Joe Ferguson, to join me to talk about that after the break, about TEP and their requests for more money. But generally, are our rates comparable in Arizona for population-wise?
So I'll tell you, our rates in Arizona for electricity, residential, are below the national average.
That's what I'm looking for.
Right. Okay. So the highest extremes are California and Connecticut, as you can imagine. But we are focused at the commission on reliability first and foremost at the most affordable rate. So we're overturning every leaf to try to find the best way to provide affordable electricity.
All right, and Joe Ferguson has joined us from Arizona Agenda, and Joe, we'll get to you. I was actually saving the TEP piece of my interview with Leah Marquez Peterson until you arrive. So why don't you, well, good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Poor guy, take a breath.
There's a lot of traffic out there. Yeah.
You come in really bad accident out there.
Uh-oh. You come at the perfect time, though, because we're ready to do our first break on the Buckmaster Show. After, and I love to talk about them, El Cisne. I don't know if Leah has been up there.
I have,
yes. All right, El Cisne. You know Phil. He's a great owner up there. El Cisne at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They present multicultural fare, fine dining, but in a casual way. You don't have to dress up in whatever. Just show up and enjoy really beautiful Mexican food. Have you been by, Joe?
Oh, yes, I have. I've enjoyed their food several times now.
Great. I love the chicken enchiladas with the green sauce. Mexican heritage, the heart and soul of El Cisne. They do a great job catering large and small events. That can include the pickup, or they'll do the delivery, they'll do the setup, the cleanup, whatever you need done. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, check out El Cisne. Take a break here on the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition. Leah Marquez Peterson is here, one of five commissioners on the very important Arizona Corporation Commission. Be right back. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. For more than 30 years, the nonprofit Save the Scenic Santa Ritas has protected Tucson's water and rare Sky Island ecology from large-scale industrial mining in the Santa Rita Mountains south of Tucson. The Santa Rita Mountains include sacred Native American sites, a crucial Sonoran Desert watershed and habitat for endangered species including jaguars and ocelots. Learn more at scenicsantaritas.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority's new voter-approved $2.67 billion Regional Transportation Plan and Tax will go into effect on April 1st. The current RTA half-cent tax will remain the same. In addition to completing over 1,000 improvements to date, the RTA will fund new improvements to upgrade, widen, and repave roads. RTA-funded transit services will continue and expand where needed. Visit rtamobility.com for quarterly reports on RTA project activities and financial trends.
A little bit of Queen, Another One Bites the Dust on the Buckmaster Show. We also have some really great, as we say in the biz, bumper music from Brendan Kraft on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. I'm Bill Buckmaster, carrying on with the Buckmaster Show tradition that began 15 and a half years ago. Joe Ferguson is my media co-host today. Joe, former Arizona Daily Star reporter, now editor of the online news service Tucson Agenda. Joe, you guys are doing a great job. I appreciated your summary today in the agenda of the tentative budget.
Yeah.
And there was one item there that really caught my eye, because next week our Friday Focus interview will be with Mr. Rio Nuevo, the chair, Fletcher McCusker. And we had had Fletcher on when all that news broke a month or so ago about the tax breaks might be going away for Rio Nuevo. Apparently that didn't happen, but there are some new regulations.
Yeah, so they did add a small regulation in there, but it also made something more permanent. So it sounds like, you know, Rio Nuevo is going to have to spend about 80% of the money that they generate after, you know, employee fees and stuff like that on things that will generate sales tax. Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. Small tweak, but it keeps Rio Nuevo in the game and makes sure that we continue to invest in businesses along the Broadway corridor and in downtown.
Our second guest next week, Councilman Dahl, Kevin Dahl, will be talking about the buses. What's the quick take on
I
that?
Think that they're happy to announce that they're very close to putting about $2 million a year into safety improvements in the buses. And so the horrible headlines that we've seen of people being attacked and the drivers be feeling afraid, you know, hopefully that will really make a dent and change the direction of where things are right now.
Is there a strike looming?
There is also a strike looming. They have about 20 days left to get an agreement in place with the company that manages SunTran. And if they don't have that in place and they don't meet the driver's demands, they are ready to walk out, which would really limit bus service moving forward.
Leah Marquez-Peterson is my Friday Focus interview. It's always great to see Leah. You are termed out on the Arizona Corporation Commission in 2028.
I am. So if there are Southern Arizonans interested in running for the commission at that time, let me know.
Mm-hmm. What about your own political aspirations?
I don't know. I mean, you both know it's all kind of timing and opportunity and what's happening at that point. So I'm open.
I mean, you ran for Congress.
Right. 2017.
What else have you run for? Congress.
And then I ran for the commission twice statewide.
Okay.
Which I enjoy campaigning. You got to kind of have it in your blood to get out there and speak to folks. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I also really have enjoyed this industry.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I now have a master's degree in electricity and water and you name it. So staying engaged in some aspect, who knows?
Okay, Joe, TEP.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the rate increase. I know that you hasn't gone in front of you, but one of the things that I've focused on is these annual built-in increases that they want, these I'm lost for words.
The formula rates.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. The formula rates. This is something new for Arizona. And when I wrote about it a few weeks back, I noted that it was done in Illinois for 20 years. And then the state decided that it really wasn't in the best interests of the consumers. So how did we get to this point where the ACC put formula rates as a possible way to manage, you know, costs for utilities?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was brought before us at the commission maybe about a year ago as a policy statement that we would explore. And at the time, there was a lot of dialogue on whether we had enough transparency around even supporting the idea of the policy statement. But ultimately, that was passed. You then saw the very first case, UNS Gas, which is up in northern Arizona, came before us. It had a formula rate included. I can't prejudge where I'm going to go with this in terms of my own vote, but you can see very clearly that I've had questions. I've said them publicly on the dais on, is it in the best interest of the public? I didn't support the formula rate in the UNS Gas case, but ultimately voted on in support of the entire rate case. And I filed letters in the dockets for TEP, APS, and all the others. We work with these online folders that are called dockets, where as commissioners, we can ask questions. So I've wanted to know, I want them to do the math. I want to see if you had a rate case 10 years ago or your last rate case and had a formula rate in place, what would the impact be today? So I want them each to do the math. I want to know, how will customers know that they're in a formula rate and what the impact will be? How are you going to communicate to others? What kind of social media or inserts in newsletters or just trying to better understand it. So that's where I've gone in terms of this direction. At this point, we're in public hearing mode on both TEP and APS rate cases now, listening to the attorneys and testimony. Our administrative law judges will be putting together recommended orders. It'll come before us, but probably not till the end of the year.
And the idea of a formula rate is that there'd be an annual increase for the utilities that would be in place and then reviewed a few years later, rather than going out for larger rate increases that are a 18-month process every few years.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. They have said, the folks that feel that this is a good move for the utilities say that they'll benefit, customers will benefit, because instead of one increase suddenly, it'll be spread over the 5 years or whatever it may be, so it'd be a more gradual impact, and that they state that people can budget better for it if you know something's coming. Others have said, will the commission have enough eyes on this? Will we have enough analysis? The utilities will be submitting documents, and we will be doing that analysis every year. So they call it the annual true-up. And not having been through one of those before, we're still trying to understand what does that look like? What parameters would we put in place or guardrails if this were to exist? So that's the big question. What would be included in an annual true-up?
And the sides on this are the ACC and TEP are in favor of formula rates, and almost everybody else that has filed in the case has said that they don't like formula rates. So,
in essence, yes. I mean, you see a lot of public comments, a lot of fear about what does this look like, a lot of different groups, different lobbyist groups coming in with their perspective at this point in each of the rate cases.
Joe, has the city put aside talk about their own utility company?
No, that's going to continue. We saw something on Tuesday night where the city had a 2.5-hour discussion about undergrounding a few miles of transmission lines, and that went on for hours. And the reality is that case is going to end up in a court somewhere. Somebody's going to file a lawsuit. But it showed again that TEP wants things done one way, and the council is trying to figure out how to both appease neighbors who have neighborhood plans for putting these things underground, saying publicly they want them underground, and TEP fighting them every inch of the way forward.
Does ACC have anything to say about that?
We do, and we'll probably be in the middle of the litigation, so I probably shouldn't speak to it. But I will say that we have received hundreds of comments, above ground, underground. And I started this conversation with you, Bill, that our focus is reliable energy, most affordable cost. I've heard estimates it costs more than 10 times to underground lines versus above ground. So as a citizen, someone who also pays TEP rates, where will they go? Who's going to fund it? You know, who's paying for this ultimately is the big question.
And underground rates lines are something that sound really good, but they require a remarkable amount of engineering to keep those lines underground cool.
Really?
So that they, and accessible, so that, you know, if something goes wrong, they can go to the transformer box and fix it. But here, they're air-cooled right now because they're above ground. If you put everything underground, you're going to have to put in technology to cool them so they don't overheat, they don't melt, those kind of things. Mm. And that is not a simple process. So that leads a little bit of credence to what she just said about, you know, the cost of undergrounding lines. It's not just about digging the hole.
Mm. All right, Leah, I've only got a couple of minutes. What still do we need to talk about?
Gosh, I always like to leave a message for the public that, one, when we see a rate case before us, it's for historical cost. People don't seem to realize that the utilities have taken the risk, spent the money. They come to us for cost recovery. So it's not future projects, it's what they've already spent. And then secondly, there's a role for the public to weigh in. You can send us emails, any of the five commissioners. We put it in those dockets, those online folders. You can testify, give public comment. You can be on WebEx and watch us and we can see you, or you can be on the phone. We're trying to be as transparent as possible, and we have hearing rooms in Phoenix and in Tucson where the TEP case will be heard eventually. Mm-hmm.
Joe, I'd like to circle back about the data centers. I mentioned Leah and I were talking about the use of the power. It's huge.
Yeah, it very much is. It's a giant concern of how that works. And TEP is largely providing that power through third-party energy contracts with providers who are making the energy in other counties or other states. And so, you know, there's a lot of impacts in that at the end of the day. It's not turning on a switch. It's not turning on a turbine. It is a complicated process. And we are essentially outsourcing some of the really bad aspects of producing energy to another part of the Southwest.
Leah, do you have anything to say about that?
No, I'd say as a TEP customer, they get a large chunk of their wind energy from New Mexico, so that comes on the transmission lines. Mm. The data centers are shopping all the states across the nation. I think we're third in the nation for data center growth. And we have to figure out, is our utility going to build that generation, or are they going to procure it, as Joe mentioned? And how do we ensure that they pay for all that? Growth must pay for growth is what you hear all the commissioners say. How do we dissect that? How do we ensure that residential customers are protected? So we're working on that.
Speaking of protected, if someone has fallen on hard times, their power will not be cut off.
Right.
Right. June 1st through October 15th.
How's that work?
Yeah, just they need to contact their utility first and foremost and work out a payment plan for the future, but people will not be disconnected. We put that moratorium in place during COVID.
And TEP has something, and I've been doing it every year for many, many years. I round off many times my bill. There's an area there that you can, that goes into like a pool, I guess, to help people pay their bills, right?
We do. We have some federal grants. We also have that program that can help neighbors help other neighbors with their bills.
All right, Leah, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Joe.
Getting an update on how we're doing. And folks just tuning in, Leah, we talked at the very beginning about, are we okay here in the hot summer with the grid?
And we are
just
prepared.
Just summarize that,
right,
for
and
us.
Having summer preparedness workshops and energy reliability events. We've had the utilities come before us at the commission to ensure that we're prepared for the incredible temperatures we're already starting to see and the load that's going to occur this summer.
One area I didn't have, this always happens, just as I'm ready to sign off, there's another question. Right, Joe?
Always.
As a journalist, there's always another question.
I usually remember it when I'm walking out of the building.
Other states, Texas, they opened up to retail utilities.
Right.
I don't know. They had dozens of them. Is that something that's still talked about here in Arizona?
Not at this time, okay. No. We had in Texas Winter Storm Uri and a negative impact on the grid, I think because a lot of that driven by retail competition and who was in charge of what, I guess I'll summarize.
Okay.
But it ebbs and flows. I'm sure it'll come back in Arizona at some point in terms of discussions.
All right. We do have a quick question from a caller who called on our live line presented by... Gives me the opportunity to say, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. You said she hung up. Or is she still?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Let's take the call. Go ahead.
My question, I don't know if you covered this because I had to do something and I couldn't listen. Why on the data centers, why do we have to pay more money when they're using electricity? I mean, to me, it would seem like, why is it spread around? If they want more electricity, then they should pay more money.
That's a good question, sir, and that is not, I guess, the conclusion I'd like you to land on. We are ensuring that growth must pay for growth. So as these large companies are coming, they've got to pay all the infrastructure expense, the substations or the different pieces of equipment they need in order to connect, and they need to pay their own way. We also want to limit their use of water. We've heard loud and clear from others using reclaimed water or air cool the unit. So we're working very hard to ensure that there is no shift to residential ratepayers. And that's every project that comes before us. That's what we're looking to.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for that. And you have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
My question.
Thank you, caller. All right. Now we will let Leah Marquez Peterson go, as we are now at about the halfway point of our program. Coming up next, we will have Steve Kasachek from Pima Animal Care Center. A couple of issues. Leah, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Food insecurity is a huge challenge in our community. Please consider donating to the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona and Interfaith Community Services. And don't forget our animal friends, supported by the Southern Arizona Food Bank, which makes sure no one ever has to make a choice of feeding their pets or feeding their families. Let's make sure no one goes hungry in Southern Arizona. And I do that public service announcement because I really do care about not only my neighbors, our human friends on two legs, but my four-legged friends. Folks that know me know I'm a huge advocate for those that cannot speak, our animal friends in the community. And that will lead me into my next guest. I do want to say you are listening to the Buckmaster Show. We continue the tradition of Buckmaster Radio on the Radio Hair now for 15 and a half years. Joe Ferguson is with me. Joe, former Arizona Daily Star reporter, now editor of the online news service Tucson Agenda. Steve Kasachek is on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve is a former Tucson City Council member from Ward 6, now director of Pima Animal Care Center, Southern Arizona's largest animal services agency, and only one open admission animal welfare facility that serves unincorporated Pima County, cities of Tucson, city of South Tucson, and the town of Oro Valley. Steve, how are you, sir?
Doing really well. How are you?
Doing well. At the top of my list for you is the big news. Finally, we've got an East Side Center, so folks don't have to drive over to the far west. This center is now up and running, correct?
Yep, it sure is. I will just say this is quite a lift. We started, looking at this probably 9 months ago, looking for locations. We know that 60-70% of the dogs that we adopt out, and dogs are primarily the issue, that we adopt out at PAC, we're at 4000 North Silverbell. They come from Midtown West, which means that we're leaving a large chunk of the population untouched. So we started looking for some locations, looked into several. The one we landed on is roughly Broadway and Kolb. It's a former mortgage brokerage firm, and the reason I say that is because the floor plan was ideal for what we were looking for. They had a series of five or six offices down each. It's a rectangular building, five or six offices down each of the long sides with a couple of conference rooms. And so we have now turned each of those offices into individual dog kennels in which either one or two dogs are housed. The conference rooms have turned into larger kennel areas where we have five or six in one and six or seven in another. And then there are a couple of large areas in the middle of the rectangle that we've carved out for meet and greet. It is in a wonderful shopping center that where our neighbors include a group, a company called Slick City. It's in the former Joann's out of Broadway and Kolb. Slick City is a family entertainment business. There's a karate studio that has lots of family and kids activities. There's a CrossFit. So we're in the midst of a shopping center that right now is very family-centric and happy to be there. We opened the doors on June the 1st, and our very first day of operation was a Monday, typically a slow day, and we had probably 25 people lined up out the door the day that we opened. So it's we're tapping into a market. I mean, if you live, for instance, PAC, where I am right now, is literally 45-minute drive to where EPAC is, the East Side PAC.
Yeah.
If you live out in Vail, it's an hour to get to PAC, and so you're asking people to drive 2 hours, you know, one way or an hour round trip to get to PAC and then spend a couple hours here. It's a day trip to come and adopt a dog.
So. Yeah, it really is. All right, here's Joe Ferguson. He has a question for you, Steve.
Steve, I just want to talk a little bit about a memo I never thought I'd see Jan Lesher write about, but Sergeant Snuggles, the 110-pound dog that people are asking you guys to release back to the family. So tell us.
So first of all, this is in court.
Yep.
So I'll be a little bit circumspect in what I say, but I will be as transparent as I can. Sergeant Snuggles is a 110-pound Anatolian Shepherd. He's a huge dog. Back in October of last year, at the family home, Sergeant Snuggles attacked Grandma and severely injured her. The injuries were such that she required stitches and staples and some plastic surgery to be put back together. We impounded Snuggles, and have now been two courts that have declared him vicious, and court ordered us to put the animal to sleep. The family continues to pay the bonds. And so the court process continues. The next hearing, take that back, the briefs on the next hearing are due on June 22nd, week after next, and then 20 days, and then the state has 20 days after that to file their counter. So Snuggles is going to be in a kennel for the next, until 20 days after June 22nd, and then a hearing will happen. The family will have the ability to go before a hearing officer, a judge, and make their plea to have Snuggles sent home. We have had conversations. I know Dan Scherer has been on Bill's show before, and we had a conversation about the three-pronged obligation that I believe that we have at PAC to not only, number one, the humane treatment of animals, number two, the safety and safety of our staff and our volunteers, and finally, the safety of the public. I believe, and the court has affirmed, that it would be unwise and unsafe to put this animal back out into the public. We have not dragged this out intentionally. The family has paid bonds. They've also engaged in a significant social media campaign. I literally have gotten emails from Nova Scotia and from Germany, from all over the world. And it's from people who do not know the facts of the case. And so they're putting out a heart plea, save Sergeant Snuggles. And, you know, they are describing this as a quote, minor bite. It was anything but that. They say they want the dog back. Now, at the time, the victim said that she was afraid for the children in the family and didn't want to go back in the home if the dog was there and all that. And the courts have affirmed our position. So if the family is able to win, in quotes, in front of the next judge, which will be the final judge, Snuggles will go home. Failing that, we will do what the court has ordered us to do, and is to euthanize the animal.
You've been doing this job for a few years now. How often has it gone to this kind of a length in terms of a legal battle?
It's rare, because usually families are not so insistent on paying a bond. They have paid up to roughly $16,000 in bond fees to get to this point. And had it not been for that, the animal would have been euthanized literally months ago. We're in the middle of June. This happened in October of last year. Yeah. You know, this is my opinion, if the family really cared about the welfare of the animal, they would not have condemned this thing to being stuck in a kennel for the last 8 months. And if it were redeemable behaviorally back in October, November, December, six months later, it's been sitting in a 6 by 12 kennel for that long a time. It is simply a dangerous animal at this point.
All right, what about 4th of July, which is just around the corner, a couple of weeks away? What should pet owners in this county know and do right now?
Right now, they should plan on coming to PAC either tomorrow or the 20th to get free microchips for your dog or cat. We, through the month of June, from Monday through Friday, from 2 to 5, and weekends 10 to 2, we are offering free microchips as well through June. Make sure that if your dog or cat bolts during the fireworks, you can find them. And we take in roughly 60% of the dogs that we bring in are strays, and fewer than 20% are microchips. So this is free. It takes you 10 minutes in our lobby to get the process done. That's one of the most intuitive things to do. Secondly is, on the week leading up to the 4th of July, because people don't just shoot their fireworks off on the 4th, they test drive them the entire week, keep the animal confined in the home. Get some white noise going, get some quiet music going, make sure that the animal's not spooked and jump in your back fence, because the likelihood is it's either going to be hit by a car, in which case it may wind up out here, and or it'll wind up out here as a stray. And, you know, if it does jump, post a picture of it on Petco Love Lost, on your neighborhood listserv, next door. Do what you can to let your neighbors know that the dog spooked. The other thing people can do is if you insist on shooting fireworks off, you can get non-concussive fireworks. You know, they're still cool when they make their colors up in the sky, but they just don't explode. And this isn't just about dogs and animals. Veterans with PTSD have reached out to the state legislature in the past to try and mandate fireworks be non-concussive. It's the the effort has gotten no legs, but I bring that up simply to make the point that this is an issue for dogs and cats and animals, but it's also an issue for people who've been through combat.
You gave a percentage of the number of intakes you get during the 4th of July week. What kind of numbers are we talking about? Are you seeing hundreds of animals coming in after the 4th of July?
Yeah, well, the week of, we see an intake. Yeah, and it is hundreds. And so let me put that in context. PAC has 233 front-facing, which is to say adoption kennels. Today we have about 430 dogs. If everything stays equal, and it won't, but let's assume we go into the 4th of July week with 430 dogs. In other words, we are already double booking our kennels. If we get another 150 dogs that week, you can do the math. You know, we're up to 600. At that point, we are putting dogs on deadline. We are euthanizing behavioral dogs for space. It really impacts the ability of our staff to work with the animals, get them socialized and get them into homes, as opposed to simply doing a numbers count and saying we simply don't have the staff or the ability to house these animals any longer. The other thing it does is it increases the likelihood of disease. The more animals you get in the confined space, if some of them get a urinary tract infection, if they get a respiratory infection, if they come down with distemper, parvo, whatever, it makes it impossible for us to control those because we just run out of isolation space. So, numbers like what we're talking about for holidays, 4th of July, Memorial Day, New Year's Eve, it has a significant impact on our ability to manage the animals and find homes for them.
Are you doing anything special to help empty out the shelter before the holiday?
Well, we're doing a big foster push right all month long. And I mentioned the 430 dogs that we have in here right now. What I did not mention is we have roughly 1,300 animals, dogs and cats, out in foster. Those are still our property and still our responsibility. If we didn't have a robust foster community, you'd add those 1,300 animals to what we have in the shelter. That's about half and half. So you'd add another 600 dogs to the 450 we got right now, and you can see what would happen to us. So the fosters are a lifeline. You do not have to make a long-term foster commitment. People often take fosters home for a weekend. If you want to make a positive impact on the shelter, take a dog home for 4th of July weekend. 4th of July is on a Saturday. The third is a Friday. Bring him back on the following Tuesday, and gets him out of the shelter, decompresses him, and it gives us an opportunity to manage the intake that we're going to get on the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th.
30-second question that goes back to your days as a council person. What do you think about this dust-up about free or not free bus fares, Steve Kasachek?
The city has a significant budget issue. We put the bus fare, we made them free bus fares, if you remember correctly, back when the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
The notion was that people are out of work, they're losing their jobs, it's hard to come by. What we should have done is reinstate the fares when the pandemic was over and the public health emergency ended. This council is not going to do that, and they've got a $10 million budget issue to deal with now.
Real quick, do you think that the Teamster strike is related to free fares at the end of the day?
I do, because I've spoken to enough the drivers, the operators, and I've ridden. When I started with the county, I was riding the Sunlink to get from home to downtown, and it is simply absurd to say that, as one council member recently said, 99.9% of the riders are just fine, and it's a 0.1% that are the ones who are getting on and causing problems. That's simply not factually true.
All right, Steve Kasachek, quickly about your hours at PAC.
You bet, and the same is true of EPAC. We are open from noon until 6:30 Monday through Friday, and from 10 until 4:30 on weekends. We will be closed on Friday the Friday, July 3rd, but open from 10 to 2 at the main shelter and 12 to 4 at EPAC on July 4th.
All right. Good news. Thanks, Steve Kasachek. Hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you both.
All right. We've got Weekend Watch coming up with 101.7 The Drive. Joe Ferguson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Interesting there to hear Steve's take on what's going on in the city. It sounds like that could possibly be worked into the Tucson agenda for early next week.
We might see something about that.
All right. Always try to make a little news here on the Buckmaster Show.
Joe, good job.
All right. Take a break right here. Let's talk about what's going on this weekend right after this.
At Tucson International Airport, we make it easy to fly from the moment you arrive.
Hop in. We'll get you from parking to the terminal in no time.
We keep our lines short so you can get to your gate quickly.
Why deal with the big city airport when you can relax with our dining options before your trip?
We'll get you off the gate and into the air fast.
At TUS, we make it easy. Visit flytucson.com. Now with nonstop flights to Portland, Las Vegas, and Salt Lake City.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
A new 20-year Regional Transportation Authority plan will be in effect starting April 1st. Voter-approved transportation improvements will be funded across the region over the next 20 years from a half-cent sales tax paid by residents, businesses, visitors, and tourists. Funds collected from across the region flow back out across the region to address the needs of all transportation users. The RTA will fund improvements to roadways, transit, bicycle, and pedestrian infrastructure, and more. Visit rtamobility.com for upcoming activities.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Friday, June 19th at noon, we talk with Rio Nuevo Chair Fletcher McCusker, also Tucson City Councilman Kevin Dahl. Then Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive on 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Always live Fridays at noon at buckmastershow.com for all of our podcasts and complete show archive. Time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where a fabulous weekend awaits you in the land of enchantment. Here's Leslie Lois from 101.7 The Drive. Hey, Leslie, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Doing real well. What's going on this weekend? Got to be kind of one of the hottest weekends of the year.
I know.
I guess you could say that for almost any weekend in June, right?
True. That is true. Hopefully we'll get some rain on Sunday. I'm crossing my fingers. Well, Loft Kids Fest continues through June 28th, the end of this month. And tomorrow and Sunday at 10 a.m., they show these free movies on Saturdays and Sundays and free popcorn.
Oh, that's a big draw right there.
Exactly. So tomorrow at 10 a.m., it's Spy Kids. And then on Sunday the 14th, it's the movie Flow, which I actually am not very familiar with.
Never heard of it, but
no. But I guess it's
maybe
a kids
some
movie.
Of the kids have.
Yeah. One thing that would be kind of cool tomorrow night, because there is a slight chance of rain, is go check out Cool Summer Nights at the Desert Museum. I've been there when the storms come through. Yeah. It's really neat, especially at night, to see all the lightning and stuff. But anyway, you can walk around with a flashlight there. You can touch a stingray. There's lots of themed activities going on. Now, that's happening every Saturday through August 29th for that. If you want to look more for more animals, of course, Summer Safari Nights at the zoo is happening. That's also happening through August. But I got to say, this is really cool. So something to do for the dads and their kids. So tomorrow is Capes and Crowns. They're You can dress up as your favorite princess or prince superhero. Enjoy a special day with your dad. There's live DJ, food, crafts, special event visits from Disney characters.
Oh.
That's happening tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Landing Community Center at Davis-Monthan, which is kind of a cool thing. And also going on, if you like the theme of dressing up, our matey, Pirate and Mermaid Night is happening at Trail Dust Town tomorrow from 5 to 8. So you can dress up as a pirate or a mermaid. There's going to be amusement rides, and that's happening from 5 to 8.
Are you getting into the soccer thing?
I am, mainly because my husband and stepson are really into soccer. So, in fact, the drive's going to be out today at Union to watch the USA team kick off this big tournament, taking on Paraguay tonight at 6 o'clock. So we're going to be watching it at Union. But yeah, my husband came home last night. It was like, first thing he did was had to turn the TV on to see. I don't even know who the two teams were playing, but he had to see what was happening.
Well, maybe this will generate a lot of interest in soccer.
Yeah.
Leslie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks, Brendan, on the other side of the glass. Hope everybody has a great weekend.